Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about grand juries. This is one of the most requested topics I've had in quite some time. People want to know what grand juries are and what do they do. So here's the deal. We've all heard of juries. If you go to trial and you're on trial for your life, you could put your the decision in the hands of a jury and let them decide your fate. And we've also heard of juries in lawsuits. You know, a jury gave this person a ton of money after a lawsuit. But a grand jury is something entirely different. It uses the word jury, but it's not the kind of thing I just talked about. So let me start by telling you, I'm going to read a recent article out of Detroit News within the last couple of years. Grand juries serve justice in secret, okay? And then I'll get into some more details later, but the grand jury system in many places operates like this. A group of 23 citizens who meet in secret inside a federal courthouse in Detroit decide the fate of those suspected of criminal wrongdoing by the government, but it's a mystery to most, which is why I'm talking about it right now. In state courts across Michigan, prosecutors file criminal charges against a suspect, but in the nation's federal district court system, a panel of citizens called grand jurors make that crucial first decision. So here's what happens. In the old days, and if you look in the Constitution, the Fifth Amendment specifically says that you have the right to a grand jury deciding whether you should be charged with a capital or other infamous crime, okay? And here's what it all came from. Back in the old days, I'm talking about back in the old country, where they had kings and so on, there was a concern that someone could prosecute you maliciously. A sheriff might have it out for you, or some other local government official might have it out for you. And next thing you know, you're locked up someplace, and you don't know what the charges are against you, and so on. And so what they did right around the time of the Magna Carta talks about it. They may have actually had grand juries before that time, but the Magna Carta includes the grand jury as one of the things that will protect individuals from a government that is not behaving properly. And so the idea is that when someone is going to be accused of a very serious crime, it's not going to be the sovereign, like the king or the president or what have you, saying, you know, I want that person prosecuted for a crime. Instead, they say you could take 23 people, and 23 is the biggest number you hear. You'll hear numbers lower than that, 16, 15, lower numbers, but 23 is a fairly common number. And they'll take 23 citizens of that community and put them someplace, and let them hear testimony being put on by somebody who suggested that a crime has been committed, and I think this is the person who did it. And they'll meet in secret, and they will present the evidence to the grand jury. And if the grand jury votes to indict the person or persons, then you get what's called a true bill or an indictment, depending on your jurisdiction. And that person can then be arrested and put on trial for the crime that the grand jury believed that, you know, there was grounds to charge that person with. And so the grand jury, it's interesting because I've told you that a jury in a criminal trial, for instance, is people off the street. They're not lawyers, they're not judges. I mean, they could be, but that's not a qualification necessary. You don't have to be anything. You're just a person off the street who got called for jury duty. And that's who decides your fate at the end. But the interesting thing is the grand jury is at the beginning, at least in the old style. And the grand jury was the one that decided, yes, this person should be charged with a crime, or no, they shouldn't be charged with a crime. But so it's interesting that you have this at both sides or both ends of the transaction where you go through the court. So grand jury decides you ought to be tried. And then, a regular jury decides whether or not you're guilty. So what they do nowadays will depend quite a bit on whether you are talking about state grand juries or federal grand juries. The federal system still uses grand juries quite extensively. Many states don't use them at all, or if they use them, they use them in a form you wouldn't recognize. Believe it or not, Michigan's got a thing called a one-man grand jury, and we've got a statute in the books that actually says that it's okay to have one person, usually a judge, put them aside and say, you are, congratulations, you're now a jury. And that one judge or person has the power to issue subpoenas, bring in witnesses, compel them to testify, examine evidence, and then they can draft the complaint or see to it that the indictment gets issued or the true bill gets issued to bring a person into court for trial. Some states have got, you know, regular grand juries like you'd expect with up to 23 members. I've seen some states that have variations on that. The interesting thing about a grand jury is they don't need to vote unanimously to indict somebody or issue a true bill. They only need to do it by majority vote. That's why you'll often hear 23 members, because that means that 12 out of 23 is a majority. I know people who've gotten notifications to appear for grand jury duty. And they get this thing that says, you know, you're being called for grand jury duty. And they don't notice the word grand in the front there. It's a completely different thing. But they also operate very, very differently. And many states look at the grand jury as a way to do an investigation to uncover crime. In other words, we know that crime is out there. We know that there's a crime ring out there. We know there's a series of crimes being committed over here. Or we know this area over here is infiltrated with crime or criminal elements. And they'll convene a grand jury. And the grand jury, when it gets convened, you get notice saying you're on a grand jury. You show up, you get questioned, and you get placed in the grand jury. They'll tell you, they'll say, look, we're going to hear testimony, say, one day a week, Monday nights, or Mondays, for, you know, a length of time. It could be up to 6 months. And you're going to be here like one day a week, okay? And that's how many grand juries work. If there's a grand jury being called for something much more serious and discreet, in terms of it's not a crime wave, but it's a single crime, they might have the grand jury meet several days in a row until they get done with their business. But the grand jury gets called together and they get seated and sworn, and they're going to now, you know, watch testimony and so on to determine whether or not people should be indicted. And the grand juries are often conducted by prosecutors, meaning that a prosecutor will be told, okay, you know, here's the grand jury, and the crime we're investigating or crime ring we're investigating or whatever we're investigating is this. Go to it. And so then the prosecutor will then issue the subpoenas, drag people in front of the grand jury. He'll question these people in front of the grand jury. And then the interesting thing is there's no judge there. There's no judge there. It's not a court proceeding in that sense. So a lot of people get confused and upset by this. And they say, wait, how can I be in court and there's no judge? Because you're not in court in front of a grand jury. And here's where a lot of this problem comes from. Is if you get called to testify in front of a grand jury, you might not want to testify. And we all know that you have a Fifth Amendment right to refuse to testify if you're going to incriminate yourself, you know, testifying against one's self, Fifth Amendment, right? Well, there's a way around that. So let's suppose you are a witness to a crime and they call you to testify and you want to take the Fifth. And you say, I'm going to take the Fifth. The prosecutor can then say, we're going to grant you immunity. Nothing you say in front of us can be used against you in any court of law for any purpose. So now you refusing to testify makes no sense because there's no self-incrimination possible if it won't be used against you. So what happens then is you can then say, oh, okay, and you testify. Or you can say, I still don't want to testify. At which point you are in contempt of court and will be shipped off to jail and left there until you agree to testify. Been a lot of famous cases involving that, especially recently. And there's some very famous cases of people who went to jail for a long period of time for refusing to testify for a long period of time. And it gets basically down to a matter of wills. You know, are you willing to sit in jail for 6 months because you refused to testify despite the fact you've been granted immunity? And that might happen. Now, grand juries don't sit forever. They usually sit for a term, and a term might be, you know, a couple months, a couple weeks, whatever it is. And so then the question becomes, once the grand jury gets disbanded, it's finished its work, can they keep holding you in jail? And the answer is probably not. They probably have to let you go at that point. So, you know, that's your choice pretty much. So one of the real important things, like I said, about the grand juries is that they originally were considered a tool to avoid malicious prosecutions. You know, so as you can imagine, if I'm the prosecutor in town and I can just prosecute anyone I want, if you get on my enemies list, you might get prosecuted. So forcing the prosecutor or the court system to run this stuff by a grand jury and have the grand jury indict somebody was seen as a way of keeping that from becoming a malicious prosecution. Now, of course, the problem is that what happens with a grand jury is the prosecutor puts in all their evidence and says, here's all the evidence that we think John Doe committed this crime. And, you know, we think there's enough evidence here to prove that a crime was committed and that he committed it. And the grand jury doesn't have to find him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt because they're not finding his guilt or innocence. What they're doing is they're deciding whether or not he should be indicted. And the level for indictment is so low that it's basically probable cause. Is there probable cause to believe that a crime was committed and that he did it? If the answer to that is yes, then the indictment or the true bill gets issued. So the standard is so low that it's still not really protecting people that much. And there's a famous saying, it's been attributed to many different people, that a prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich. And here's the thing. If you are the subject of a grand jury investigation, let's suppose you found out that you are the subject of a grand jury investigation. Now, grand juries do their investigations in secret. No one's allowed to watch this stuff. The transcripts are considered sealed unless released by court order. And they don't publicize their work. And the grand jurors are sworn to secrecy on all of this. But let's suppose you found out that they're doing a grand jury investigation of you. Okay? If you go to the prosecutor and go, I want to testify. Prosecutor can say, about what? To who? You say, the grand jury. And they'll say, no, we don't have to let you testify. The grand jury gets run by the prosecutor for the most part. And if the prosecutor chooses not to call certain people, he doesn't have to. And so many people are critical and they say, wait, the prosecutor, knowing that there's five witnesses to something, but only calls the one who's going to testify the way he wants, but won't call the four who sought the other way. Unfortunately, that's the way the grand jury system works. So the prosecutor can call the witnesses that he wants to get his case in, proven, and get an indictment. And you might find out later the prosecutor skipped a lot of information. It's not supposed to happen that way, but it can. One thing you hear about very, very occasionally is a runaway grand jury. And there's a movie called Runaway Jury not too long ago, but that was about a trial jury. But a runaway grand jury is where a grand jury, when they find out the powers they have, notwithstanding the prosecutor who's telling them what to do, a grand jury can issue subpoenas. And a grand jury can also question witnesses if they want to. So a prosecutor calls a grand jury, seats them, swears them all in, and they start doing an investigation. If the grand jury doesn't like the way this thing is going, if they want to, they can issue subpoenas of their own. Or they could ask follow-up questions that the prosecutor didn't ask, if they want to. It doesn't happen that often, but it could. Okay, so keep that in mind. Now, what I want to point out to you, among other things, I mentioned earlier, is the feds have grand juries, and they're still in a lot of use across America, the federal grand juries in the federal court system. State grand juries are much less common. Some states use them quite a bit. Some states don't use them. Michigan has a one-man grand jury, which they can use if they want to. But Michigan has also simply adopted the idea that instead of a grand jury, they can also indict you after a preliminary examination. So if they find out that a crime was committed and a police officer swears out a thing saying, yes, a crime was committed and there's evidence to prove that this person did it, and the prosecutor looks at it and goes, yeah, looks good to me, they can bring you in for a preliminary examination. And then a judge will make the decision about whether or not there's probable cause to bind you over for trial. And that is, that was there a crime committed, more likely than not? And more likely than not, is this the person who did it? And then they will then hold you over, and then eventually you'll get tried in front of a regular jury. But Michigan still does occasionally use full-size grand juries, but they almost always use them simply in situations of extremely complicated matters. And I know that there have been a couple examples in the past where there was allegations of a criminal activity on a big scale, of a criminal enterprise. And they seated a grand jury specifically so they could just subpoena tons and tons of people and drag them all in front of the grand jury. It's basically to see who's going to talk, who's not going to talk. The people who took the fifth, they'd take a look at it, try to figure out if they should give them immunity or not. And eventually the grand jury issued a bunch of indictments. And there's been several cases like that in Michigan. But you'd hear about it less and less. More often than not, you hear about the one-man grand juries or the preliminary examination, which is considered to be the functional equivalent of a grand jury in terms of you get a hearing to determine whether or not you should be put on trial and whether or not a crime was even committed. So a couple other things that are really, really important to note is that, like I said, grand juries were more common in the old days. I've mentioned before I wrote a book about the Italian Hall disaster in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where somebody yelled fire in a crowded theater and 73 people died in a stampede to get out of the building. At the moment that that happened, there was a grand jury impaneled in Houghton County, Michigan, and their charge was to investigate any crimes related to the strike that was taking place at that time. And so the Italian Hall disaster happened on Christmas Eve, 1913, and the grand jury should have investigated the Italian Hall disaster. We don't know if they did or not because their proceedings are in secret, but we do know that the only indictments they ever issued were against union organizers. And one of the most profound things that we discovered afterwards was if you looked at the makeup of the grand jury, it was packed with mining interests, meaning that, like, for instance, the man who ran the biggest mine in the area, his chauffeur was on the grand jury. So that did two things. Number one, it guaranteed that nothing bad was ever going to come out against the mines. And number two, that the guy who was in charge of the mines would know every single day what was going on in the grand jury because his chauffeur would just tell him. So I'm certain that that happened. Can't prove it, but I'm certain that it happened. So, you know, like anything else, a grand jury can be abused. But you should know that, for instance, there have been some famous people indicted by grand juries, including Nixon. Richard Nixon actually testified in front of a grand jury. And later on, he was mentioned, but not indicted by them. But he was referred to as a secret, unindicted co-conspirator. And you'll recall that he resigned the office in disgrace shortly thereafter. But he did actually testify before a grand jury. And grand juries have been convened on other matters of great interest. But again, because they operate in secret, a lot of people don't know what they do, who they are, or even whether ones existed or not. Like, for instance, for all I know, there could be a grand jury right now someplace near me investigating crimes of some sort. I don't know, because they're doing it in secret. So remember, a jury might decide you're guilty of a crime or not guilty. A jury might award you money after a trial or might not award you money. But the grand jury is at the beginning of the process, if it's used, and they're the ones who simply decide whether or not someone should be indicted for something. And like I said, a grand jury is drawn as a group of people out of the public. And the thinking originally was that that would keep the crown or whoever else is in power, put a little check on them to keep them from just hauling people in for no reason or for vindictive purposes and putting them on trial for nothing. A grand jury was going to be, you know, kind of act as a buffer on all of that. So that is what a grand jury is and what they do. I hope that answered it for you. Otherwise, questions or comments, put them below. Talk to you later.